coming up real soon. Stay tuned.
Hi everybody, this is Ben Starr with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. That's right, ideas, concepts, and guests. And today we have a lot of guests for you, much more than usual. It's actually a full house here in the studio. And as you know, we like to keep things topical. We like to talk about things relevant to what's going on. We like to talk about what other people are talking about. But we like to talk about it in our own way, and we like to share that with you. And today, probably the most topical thing that I could think of would be the fact that tonight there will be $1.5 billion being given away in the Powerball lottery drawing. $1.5 billion. It's so many zeros, I can't even wrap my mind around it. $1.5 billion. And you know what? I'm not the kind of guy who likes to gamble, who likes to play the lottery. But when I saw that number, okay, the number at the corner store by my house has only three digits. They broke the sign. It now just says 999. But it's even higher than that. It's more than 999 million. But they don't even have room for the amount of digits that the prize is. It's unbelievable. And to shed more light on this, I've invited some people here today who are experts on the topic of gambling and lottery, but specifically gambling and addiction and the compulsion that comes with that. And I'm very, very pleased that they were able to join me on such short notice, and I'd like to thank them for that. In the studio with me, I have Frank Grazioli and Sylvia Franco. They're both from the Gambling Clinic over at Columbia University Uptown. And I have Linda Berman. She's a clinical social worker and co-author of Behind the Eight Ball. It's a recovery guide for families of gamblers. It's a book that's been out for 22 years, translated into Chinese and Korean. Linda, thanks for being here today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yes, absolutely. And Sylvia, Frank, I appreciate you coming down from 116th Street and making it down here to join us today for the show.
Thank you. Great to be here with you.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
So let's talk about this, Powerball, right? But more generally, lottery. At what point, Linda, do you think someone goes from a recreational gambler, right? Like I described myself, I bought it sort of on a whim, recreationally, casually. So where's the line between a recreational gambler and a compulsive gambler?
Okay. A recreational or social gambler is someone who gambles within a time, money, and emotional budget. In other words, it does not reflect on their self-esteem. It is within their monetary or financial life. And emotionally, they don't rely on it to regulate their emotions, their frustrations, their sadness, and so on and so forth. So that's someone who just enjoys the pleasure of gambling, of attempting to predict the future and feel very special and to be a winner.
Is that what it's about, predicting the future?
Yes, it's about predicting the future.
Wow.
I have my Powerball ticket here, and I know my numbers will win.
Oh, yeah? Because I have mine right over here. And I'm not so sure mine will win, but,
keep a positive mind. You'll never know.
Of course, I always do, Linda. And you know, it's interesting that we have here, we have a group of four people and, four adults living in New York. And of the four of us, two of us have a Powerball ticket. I mean, when you think about that, it's unbelievable how many people are participating in this. I went to the corner store this morning. I usually make my coffee at home. I went to the store to get a coffee because I was kind of in a rush. And I saw there was a line of six people. And all of them were buying Powerball tickets, and several of them spent $10 on Powerball tickets. I mean, it's incredible. Sylvia, you've done a lot of research on compulsive gambling and gambling addiction. Is there a genetic predisposition, do you think, to being addicted to gambling or to deal with that?
Yes, definitely. Gambling disorder runs in families. A study made in the University of Iowa showed that first-degree relatives of people with a gambling disorder are 8 times more susceptible or have 8 times more risk to develop a gambling disorder themselves compared to people that do not have problem gamblers in their families.
So first-degree relatives meaning mother, father, brother, sister?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. A lot of epidemiological studies show that the genetic factors operate not only in the initiation of the addiction, but also in the maintenance of the addiction. There, it's believed that addictions are moderately to highly inheritable. Despite this, both genetic and environmental factors play a role in the development of an addiction.
Nature and nurture, is that what you mean?
Exactly.
Okay.
So somebody can have a very big predisposition, genetic predisposition to develop an addiction, but he might not develop an addiction because he was not exposed to gambling or because he has competing interests like hobbies, exercise. Or maybe
they just live too far away from a casino or somewhere that sold scratch-off tickets.
Exactly.
But now... Every person in America is only 200 miles away from a casino.
Really? Wow, that's an interesting tidbit right there. I guess that's with the proliferation of all the reservation casinos that we've seen in recent decades. That's probably a part of that, I would guess, right?
Mm-hmm. Accessibility.
Yeah, it used to be that you had to go all the way to Vegas to gamble, and that certainly has changed. Frank, you do a lot of work at the gambling clinic at Columbia University. You're a social worker there. Do you see a correlation between gambling addiction and in the people that you work with and other forms of addiction? For example, do you think that people who are addicted to gambling may be more prone to alcoholism or other substance addictions?
I think there's definitely you can draw correlations here with co-occurring disorders of substance addiction or other behavior addictions. It's often said when you see someone with an addiction or someone who's abusing a substance, they're medicating something. They're using that activity or the substance to address something else that's not going right in their life. A number of the clients, patients that I work with and see have a history of opiate addiction, maybe past alcoholism or other behavioral addictions in the family. So I think that's definitely true. And if I could just jump on something that both Linda and Sylvia mentioned, too, about the social effects, I can't say specifically. I know I need to attribute this to someone, but I think that the social variables or factors are extremely important in considering or being able to predict who will actually develop a compulsive addiction to gambling versus those who can manage to remain social gamblers and play for fun and set their limits and stick with their limits. They often say genetics kind of define the possibility, but the environment creates the reality.
Okay, so here's a question. I know, Linda, you have a ticket. I just saw you showed me your Powerball ticket.
It's a winner. It's definitely a winner.
Yeah, you think so? You think so?
No.
I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting for you. If you win, don't forget WBAI needs your tax-deductible contribution.
You're definitely on my list.
But let me ask you, Sylvia and Frank, if you don't mind, when's the last time you gambled, if at all? Have you gambled recently in the last year, in the last 10 years? Have you ever gambled?
Personally, I have never gambled.
No?
Nope.
So you've never gambled, and yet this is a topic that draws you into it as to study and to research. What is it about the topic that has moved you to dedicate, your life, in a sense, to study this?
Well, definitely addiction is one of my main interests, both behavioral and chemical dependencies. And it's very important to try to treat both as a same topic because they both shared similar environmental and genetic factors. And
Let me jump in here. We're all gamblers of one kind or of another.
Sure.
Whether it's about a leap of faith or a leap into a 2K run or a leap into life or to love. And without risk-taking, and with the gamblers, the risk-taking becomes something of a stimulant to living and to feel more alive. So we're all gamblers, whether we gamble with money, okay, and to predict the future and to say we are winners. That's another story.
Well, okay? I'm so glad that you bring that up, Linda, because one of the things we like to do here on The Positive Mind is we have this big dictionary here that
you can see.
And we like to get definitions for words because it helps. Even when we're talking about something that we all think we know what we're talking about, I'd like to read the definition of gamble. It's the first definition is to play games of chance for money. Now, that's the very surface level. That's the very kind of obvious definition. But the next two are the ones that I'm really interested in, and that's what you reminded me of just now. To take a risk in order to gain some advantage, right? And the last one is an act or undertaking involving a risk of loss.
And gain. In other words, to take a risk of, let's say, money. We're using money as a medium. To take $2 and make it into $1 billion. And that's one of the reasons why gamblers who are out-of-control gamblers. Let's define it. A person who gambles, okay, and gambles every week doesn't mean that they're addicted to gambling. So I think, you know, Frank and Sylvia, if we could define compulsive gambling for the listeners, I think it would be very helpful at this point.
Right. I think, Sylvia, you and I were discussing, you know, kind of comparing or contrasting two typical personality types that might gamble from time to time. You may have a 65-year-old retired male, plays poker 3 times a week, never increased his gambling over 20 years, doesn't stay at casinos longer than he promised himself he would or told other people he was going to be there.
So he's not compulsive, right?
Allocates time for hobbies. And his family and intimate others, significant others, are aware of his whereabouts. And there's no shame, there's no covering it up.
Yeah. On the other hand, you can have, for example, a 25-year-old guy who just started working. Every time he receives a paycheck, he gambles. He steals from the roommate. He uses the money that he's supposed to pay for the rent, and he uses it for gambling. He conceals his gambling from his family. Also, he attempts to reduce his gambling, and this causes a lot of stress or irritability. This would be considered a compulsive gambler.
So the main difference that I hear is honesty and dishonesty. One person is sort of open about what they're doing, and the other one a little sneakier.
Not necessarily.
There are actually specific criteria to define what is a compulsive gambler. And there's a manual that is called the DSM-5. That is a manual that psychiatrists, psychologists, and social workers use to diagnose different mental disorders. There are around, if I'm not wrong, 9 criteria. And if you have at least 4 of them, you have a gambling disorder. Criteria are, for example, preoccupation with gambling. So thinking about your next gambling venture, planning on ways to get money to gamble. Other criteria are, for example, needing to gamble with more amounts of money, as you said before, lying, jeopardizing work opportunity or career opportunities, having to ask other people to pay gambling debts, different criteria.
Okay, so the people that I hear you describing are the sort of people that we hear being often judged and sort of reviled, right? These are the people called, you know, they get called fools or degenerates because they can't control themselves. And yet, by the same token, we sort of worship the most successful gamblers, don't we?
Well, I mean, it's called the entrepreneur,
right? And the stock market,
the hedge fund operators. In other words, the biggest casino in the world is the stock markets.
Of course,
you know, the investor, quote unquote, is attempting to predict the futures for a gain.
And look at Warren Buffett, right? He's such a good investor. People call him the Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about that. And yes, he's maybe it's more educated, maybe it's more thought out, but essentially, isn't it gambling?
Yes.
The stock market?
Yes.
Ben, I wanted to come back to something you also mentioned, that the difference between compulsive gambling and recreational is this honesty thing, that actually the honesty or covering up and concealing is the byproduct of the shame or stigmatization. This is, as a social worker, a favorite aspect of addiction and you know, studying addiction. And the shame, we may get to this during our conversation, can often be a barrier to seeking treatment or at staying with treatment. But going back to it, I still think that one of the driving differences really is the control, the loss of control.
The loss of control.
And we place such a premium in our culture, in the U.S., on being in control, on calling shots, on keeping,
taking risks.
And taking risks.
The American dream was built on it.
When you fall, you don't want to be shamed. You don't want it thrown back at you.
And with a compulsive gambler or someone who's gambling out of control, there are problem gamblers who, after a series of gambling episodes and the consequences are so unique and so difficult for them, they do stop gambling. So you have a social gambler, you have a problem gambler that stops when the negative consequences mount, and then you have a compulsive gambler that goes into an illusionary thinking about it. And the more they feel shame, the more they feel guilty, the more the gambling is a solution to
Right. Like, I just need one big hit to solve all my problems.
And, you know, my wife, my husband will be happy
with
me.
The mortgage, all this, the car loan.
But let me switch to the family. Okay, the difficulty with the hidden nature of gambling, out of control gambling, and its impact on the family. We have to remember that the family is an economic unit, and a drain on one person draining the family unit, the economic unit, affects generations and generations and generations, right, Frank?
Yes, yeah. I mean, if you look at epigenetics, the study of of gene mutations over time, and early exposure to trauma, for example, can make lasting changes in our brains. And those are the genes we pass along to others. Just an interesting point there that I think the American Bar Association indicates that about 2-3% of the general population in the U.S. have a problem with gambling, and being that they're directly involved with it, they're gambling. The province of Ontario, Canada, back in 2010, who's created a wonderful pamphlet on counseling cross-culturally gambling problems, indicated that for every person who struggles with gambling, there are 8 to 10 other persons directly related to them who suffer the impact. And that goes to Linda's point, you know, about the family being an economic unit. So if you have someone who is supposed to be the primary earner and that's not coming in, you know, there's the family pays for it.
Mm-hmm. Incredible. You're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI. I'm your host, Ben Starr, and we're talking about the $1.5 billion jackpot this evening in the Powerball. In the studio with me, my guests, Frank Grazioli and Dr. Sylvia Franco of the Gambling Clinic at Columbia University, and Linda Berman, a clinical social worker here in New York City, author of Behind the Eight Ball, a recovery guide for families of gamblers. You know, it's incredible because when you think about it, the lottery is sort of the most accessible form of gambling, right? I mean, we don't, like you said, we may live within 200 miles of a casino, but everyone lives within a couple blocks of a corner store.
How many people live near a church or synagogue for bingo?
Sure, that too. But, I mean, almost, and certainly in New York City, on every corner is a convenience store where you can buy a scratch-off, where you can buy a Powerball ticket. Is it the most prevalent form of gambling? Is it, what do you see in terms of people that you work with? Because you all three of you work with people who are addicted to gambling. Where do you see the lottery in terms of the prevalence of gambling addictions?
I don't think I see a preponderance of lottery gamblers. You know, sports betting is very, very big.
Sure.
Sports. It used to be horses, but gamblers would call horses ponies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, there is a confusion between play and work in a problem gambler or a compulsive gambler's mind.
You mean they think of the gambling as a work?
As work, and it was also as play.
Uh-huh.
That it's fun.
Sure.
And so I don't know. Perhaps Sylvia has more information on that.
Oh. Yeah. Well, there was a study. I think it was 2002 with Wald and colleagues that they did a survey to around 3,000 individuals in the United States, and they found that the most common type of gambling was the lottery. Around 66% of the population of the respondents have played lottery the year before the survey. In the second place, I think it was raffles and charity and office pool. And third place was casinos with 27% of the population.
Where does sports better come
from? It was right after that, 20% cards and 20% of the population sports betting. Mm-hmm. And not only lottery was the most common, but lottery was also the most frequent. Around 13% of the population that was in the survey did weekly gambling with the lottery. The rest of types of gambling were only 2% of the population would do weekly gambling.
Imagine if it was as easy to vote as it is to play the lottery. Just imagine if as many people voted as play the lottery. Incredible, right?
When you think about the lottery, too, think about the ubiquity of lottery or any of the paper games, scratch-offs. You mentioned convenience stores, gas stations, supermarkets. You can't not escape it. It's wherever you go. And also because it involves such low investment, low stakes, too, it makes it a very low barrier to begin to engage in that behavior. So.
I'm really glad that you bring up the low stakes, Frank, because that's what I think of when I see there's $1.5 billion jackpot, and all I have to do is put in $2 to have a chance, however small. By the way, the odds are 1 in 290-something million, so a very small chance. But that's what I have to pony up, so to speak, mm-hmm. to have a chance is $2. And really, what I don't believe that I have a chance to win, but I'm buying a fantasy. Because now for 3 or 4 days, I get to fantasize and think about what I would do with the money if I won. The people that I would help, right? The places that I would go. The adventures that I would have. The things I want to do and give to my family and friends. And that's what it is for me. It's a fantasy. And how mm-hmm. successful is the lotto at selling that fantasy?
Well, you never know.
Right.
You never know. Now, I'd like to talk to Frank and Sylvia about this, that for people who need an extraordinary positive fantasy in their lives, where they're feeling down, depressed, they're feeling low, like losers, this offers a $2 fantasy trip. And so I was wondering if you could address the issue of depression and people who gamble out of control.
So people normally start gambling for fun, yeah, as a recreational thing. The initial drive is money, not just money to be a millionaire, but money to maybe improve their financial situation, maybe pay the college to the kids, pay debt. But there's also people that gamble as an escape, as a way to deal with emotional problems, with a breakup, with difficulty in the marriage, with dissatisfaction with their lives. So gambling, for example, in a casino offers an alternative reality with lights, with luxury, with all sorts of food, with entertainment. So it offers like an escape from that reality they're living. But the thing here is that gambling also causes or it's related to other types of mental disorders, anxiety, depression. Even people with gambling have higher risk of suicide attempts. So
yeah, I just want to draw on something a little bit that Sylvia has mentioned here. And even if you think in the context of a casino, there's two different very dynamics going on in a casino. You have table games. It's all about the social and showing off, feeling great, being cheered on, people wanting to sit next to you, being offered drinks. And that's, you know, that's all about put me in a place where I'm accepted, where I come in and I'm among kings.
And unique.
Then look at video poker and the slots. That can be a very dissociative experience. People will sit, you know, the machines are built with visors around them.
They're it's almost
in a
hypnotic
zone.
Right?
Yeah, and it's a complete dissociation from the social environment around them. So when you think about what people used to call comorbidities, co-occurring disorders, you know, how does something like sitting at one of these machines for hours influence development of or existing depression or feeling down.
Well, there's all kinds of psychology behind the design of casinos, the way they're laid out, the odds for certain things like slot machines, the things that are given away comped for free to people who play a lot. And all that is designed, right, for the house to always win.
The house always wins.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect medium to escape from pain and also to manage pain and also to enhance one's life, to make it more grander, more unique, more special. And with those people who gamble out of control, they have a unique vulnerability to wanting to feel special and wanting to feel unique and wanting to feel omnipotent. You know, if you could predict the future, you're omnipotent.
So it comes down to power. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it comes down to a feeling. You talked about fantasy, mm-hmm. omnipotent control over one's life. A compulsive gambler once said to me, he said, "I never lose. I always, always win. Almost always win."
Incredible. So would you say then, based on what you just said, that someone who feels out of control and down and out in their own life is at a higher risk to become a compulsive gambler?
Yes.
If they...
Of course, illusion. It's about illusionary and magical thinking. The thinking is, oh, here's a $2 Powerball.
Right, and it's 1 in 290 million, but I'm the special one.
I feel it.
Right.
I feel it right now. I got it.
Right.
I have it right now. I have my future right now.
Right.
I'm safe.
So let me ask you all a question. Starting with you, Linda, since you're the only one besides me in here who
actually... This is my third... I want to just say to the audience, this is my third lottery ticket in 30 years.
Right, and I know...
But this is the one that's going to win.
I know the last one that you bought. It was.
It's on my refrigerator.
It reminds me
I'm a winner.
It was a few years ago. I think it was a Mega Millions. That was like $600 or $700 million. That's when you bought...
No.
You didn't buy that?
No, I don't remember that one.
No, that was recently. I mean, not recently, but 2011 or 2012.
Again, it was... Maybe I was feeling low that day.
And maybe. And let me ask you, what would you do if you won?
Oh, well, half I would give away.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Then half I would be very aggravated about.
How so?
Maybe Frank and Sylvia have talked to people who have won a lot of money very quickly. The impact on the family, their businesses, their friendships, it's a lot of stress.
Well, we know that a lot of people
go broke. A percentage of them go into bankruptcy. I don't know. It's a very high percentage.
Or witness protection.
Or witness protection. You know, this is an extraordinary event to people.
Yeah, all kinds of people start coming out of the woodwork, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, remember me? We sat next to each other
in
7th grade.
Do you love me or do you need me?
Yeah. So you'd give away half.
Yes, definitely.
You already know the charities and the causes?
WBAI. Oh, you're first. It's on the list.
You're perfect. You're perfect. What about the rest? You would agonize over what to do with it?
Yes.
Would you run away to some like island, a remote island in the Pacific for a few years, try to let it blow over?
No. I'd take my family with me,
yeah,
whether they like it or not.
Well, I would still do the positive mind because I'm in radio for the love, not for the money. You know, but what would you guys
do? Would you give away your Powerball ticket today?
I would give away half of my winnings, like you.
Okay, we're both good pledge to it.
I would set up a nonprofit, Linda, and I would hire you to be on the board. How about that?
I accept.
And what would you guys do if let's say I handed you $1 billion? What would you do?
You know, I've never thought of having that much before, and I think that probably what I would do is just try to take care of those that are closest to me first and sit it out. I'm still cutting losses from the Golden Globes. So that's
okay. Sylvia, what would you think you
definitely
would do?
Definitely, I think I would try to share it with the family members that maybe have debts and donate a significant amount to neuroscientific research. Also in the cause of addictions, different types of addictions. And I think that keep a little bit, but not too much to make me feel uncomfortable with the disparity of income.
Only like a couple hundred million, right?
Only just a couple hundred million.
All right. Well, that's good to know. And we'll be taking your calls in the second part of the program. Want to hear from people who have struggled with gambling addiction, family members of people who struggle with gambling addiction.
And people who love to gamble.
And people who love to gamble and aren't ashamed of it. I mean, look, it is what it is. If you're a gambler, you're a gambler, and I'm not judging you. But I wanted to speak to these experts here today. Once again, Frank Grazioli and Dr. Sylvia Franco of the Gambling Clinic at Columbia University here in New York City, and Linda Berman, a clinical social worker, have joined me today on the occasion of the largest lotto jackpot in human history. And it's a big deal, folks, and I wanted to have them here to talk about lottery and gambling and really get into this. But we will be taking your calls, and as always, the number to call here is 212-757-5555. That's 212-757-5555. We're going to take a musical break, and after the break, we'll be back and taking your phone calls. Thanks for tuning in.
They call you Lady Luck, but there is room for doubt. At times you have a very unladylike way of running out. You're on this date with me. The pickings have been lush. And yet before this evening is over, you might give me the brush. You might forget your manners. You might refuse to stay. And so the best that I can do is pray. Luck be a lady tonight. Luck be a lady. Gentlemen, see just how nice a dame you can be. I know the way you treated other guys you've been with. How about you being a lady with me? A lady doesn't leave her escort. It isn't fair. It isn't nice. A lady doesn't wander all over the room and then blow on another pair of dice. Why don't we keep this party polite? Never move out of my sight. Stick with me, baby. I'm the guy that you came in with. Be a lady tonight. Luck let a gentleman see just how nice a lovely dame you can be. I know the way you treated other guys you've been with, but luck be a lady with me. Lady doesn't leave her escort. It isn't fair, and it's not nice. A lady doesn't wander all over the room and then blow on another guy's dice. How about we keep this party polite? Never move out of my sight. Stick with me, baby. I'm the guy that you came in with. Luck be a lady. Lady tonight.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to The Positive Mind on WBAI. And now your host, Ben Starr.
That was Frank Sinatra with Luck Be a Lady from Sinatra at the Sands live album. And you're listening to The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI in New York. And here today, on the day of the largest lotto drawing in human history, I've invited some experts on gambling, addiction, and compulsive gambling. I have here in the studio Frank Grazioli and Dr. Sylvia Franco from the Gambling Clinic at Columbia University, as well as Linda Berman, a clinical social worker here in the city, and the co-author of Behind the Eight Ball, a recovery guide for families of gamblers. And we would like to open up the phone lines to you listeners out there, whether you're a gambler, a compulsive gambler, a family of a gambler, or just someone, you know, who likes to maybe roll the dice now and then. Give us a call. Our number here in the studio is 212-757-4488. And our first caller is Marina. Marina, thanks for the call.
Well, hi. I really enjoyed the music. It was really good.
I'm glad you liked it, Marina.
Well, on my end, I am not a gambler, but my boyfriend for many, many years is. And I remember when I first started dating him, I didn't really know anyone who was a gambler, and he kind of hid it for a while, and then it became more and more evident. And so I was very concerned, and so I had gone to a Gammon meeting to find out how to deal with it. And I remembered, I remember very well, the woman said to me, do you have sneakers? And I said, yes. And she said, well, put them on and just keep running. So, and when I tell you, he's a kind of gambler now. I mean, and I finally got to a point where, I mean, he's wonderful in a lot of ways, so I'm still with him. And I just couldn't stand that he would kind of go and call his bookie or just be very quiet about it because he knew it would upset me. So I finally just said to him, look, you know, this isn't going to work, so just be upfront with me because I am an upfront person. I don't like lying. So he is. And so I would say on average he does sports betting almost every day.
Every day, huh?
Almost. Yeah, I would say almost every day. And not a whole lot, but it still goes on, you know. And he knows when, I mean, I'm not really sure if I believe it, but he knows when to stop and he knows, you know, he knows his limits.
What do you think about that, Linda? That he knows when to stop and he knows his limits?
How do you know that?
I don't for sure, but I do know that, I mean, we are so connected as far as money that I know a lot more than, you know, the average boyfriend and girlfriend.
You know, that's a very good point, that in most families, money is the secret. And much more than even sex or secrets around family members and things like that. So money is not discussed. And if you're living with someone who gambles too much, the first thing you need to do is to understand the financial situation you're in. And that means to know everything. And some families divide the jobs and leave the economic life of the family to the gambler, and that could cause a great deal of disruption to the family and cause a great deal of trouble in the future and a terrible crisis. Frank, you have some thoughts on this?
Yeah, just to bounce off what you're saying, Linda, and for Marina too. First of all, I'm glad to hear that you're finding a way to make this work, and it seems like there's definitely a supportive relationship going on between the two of you. You don't have a lot of the information about evidence of financial hardship.
No, I don't. And to tell you the truth, I think he hides so much from me, mm-hmm. too. I do. I really do. I don't trust it 100%. I just can't.
Right. So the thing that sort of the operative here that you raised was the hiding of it, the concealing, and that's something I'd probably want to explore more, too. You know, his feelings around his own gambling, he could be hiding great losses, greater than what you're aware of, which is, mm-hmm. you know, the contact who told you to put on sneakers is thinking very pragmatically that way. But, you know, Linda, in her experience, too, and dealing with relationships and how gambling affects families and intimacy, you know, it's probably something to explore there.
Yeah.
I'd like to add one other point, if I may.
Sure, sure. I just want to let you know really quick. I just want to let you know, Marina, I want to let you know, and listeners out there, that Frank and Sylvia here work out of a gambling clinic at Columbia University that offers free counseling for gambling addiction. So, you know, if it ever got to the point, Marina, where your boyfriend was, you know, willing and ready to seek help, that may be a place to start.
And we also offer the help for significant others as well.
Yeah.
Well, that's good, because I don't think he's though. But, you know, it's so funny that you should say that, you know, the intimacy, because to tell you the truth, you know, I was married, I had my family, so this is a second relationship. So I kind of, like, not that I don't care, it's just kind of easier. But what I want to say is that I know I come behind gambling and sports, and so those things are definitely intimacy breakers. He does not see it that way. I don't even try to even make him see it that way. It's just the way that it is. And when you said that, it was just like it struck a nerve that, yeah, that's it. Mm. You know, I couldn't even think about interfering with it.
And that's probably the hardest thing, isn't it? Not coming first in that situation. And I can
I was going to ask you guys, I mean, if I were your best friend, and just to say, let's say I was just beginning this relationship, would you tell me to leave? I mean, would you tell me that this is like a hardship? Oh, and he also drinks tremendously. And he's totally a different person when
Let me tell you. Let me cut right to the chase, okay?
Good, please.
You know, you deserve more of him. You deserve more of him or someone else. You know, with a gambler, he's 1,000 miles away, you know, practicing his gambling or covering his bets and then drinking too much, possibly in your case. You deserve more of intimacy, and deserve more of a partnership. So, you know, I would suggest, you know, why don't you pick up my book, Behind the Eight Ball, A Recovery
Guide. I'm
going to.
I already wrote it down. I'm definitely going to get it.
Yeah. Marina, thanks so much for the call. We're going to try to take some more callers.
Much.
Good luck
everything.
With everything, and thanks for tuning in.
Take care. Bye-bye.
212-757-5555 is the number to call. That's 212-757-5555. And we're talking about compulsive gambling. We're talking about this massive Powerball jackpot this evening. And we're talking about what it's like to be a gambler or to be a family or a loved one of a gambler.
I hope somebody calls that has won.
Oh, that's won a large jackpot or a lot of money?
A large jackpot or someone in, you know, in a casino that put in a quarter and out pops. Oh, I don't know if the money does spill out anymore, right. Does it? Or does it come out in a ticket? Do you know, Sylvia? Do you know, Frank?
It's a little more virtual than spilling out. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was more fun when it came out with the.
It would be interesting to get the perspective of someone who has won big and hear how it maybe changed or did not change, you know, their life. Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's think about how many buses of seniors go to the casinos and what a lovely day it is for them.
Yeah,
and
incidentally, a lot of those buses are organized from the same convenience stores that are selling the lotto tickets. It's incredible. Let's take another caller. We have someone on the line who describes themselves as a compulsive gambler. Hamid, you're on the line. Thanks for calling in.
Hello. You guys can hear me?
Yes. How are you doing today?
Okay. Okay, I'm doing wonderful. I love your show. I've been listening since ever.
Thank you.
I'm just a little bit disappointed that you have two hosts and you have nobody from Gamblers Anonymous who can give really some statistic or info. I heard your last caller, and I have one question for everybody in the studio, even that caller. Compulsive gambler is an emotional illness, just like physical illness. If your husband or your wife is diagnosed with cancer, should you leave them or should you help them? We're talking about gambling.
You've made an excellent point about destigmatizing compulsive gambling. It is an illness. However, I was going to have somebody from GA come and share the mic with me today, and he refused because he understood that it would be too exposing him to the judgments of the society, and that he is in a sensitive position, and he wants to maintain his anonymity. And I thought maybe perhaps Frank or Sylvia would lend a comment about the anonymity
well,
and its important.
If you have somebody who really doesn't care if they hear me. I'm not here.
Well,
to
thank you very much. It's
no,
very
no
helpful
problem.
to the
Can
public.
Can I continue?
Go ahead.
Yes, I'm not here to hide my illness. As if I had cancer or if I was diagnosed with diabetes, I would not sit back. And I tell you, yes, I'm clean over 10 years. 10 years ago, I was ashamed to say that I had a gambling problem. And I tell you, I lost everything. I was homeless. My children were homeless. But the point is, I'm going to give you a quick statistic in this country. There are over 15 million, and these are not my number. These are the number of Department of Health of America, compulsive gambler in this country. We have over 1,753 rooms, GA rooms, in this country. Times that by average 25 people, you don't get even half a percent of people who trying to get help. Yes, there are 99.5% of compulsive gamblers out there.
So how can people support that, and how can people, what can we do out here to support that and increase that number?
Denial.
No, well, what I'm asking, Hamid, is how can we contribute? What can we do to improve that number?
I'm trying to tell you. Unfortunately, there is something that I brought up in GA rooms and in higher level, ISO, and the whole country. We don't advertise because the primary purpose of Gamblers Anonymous is attraction.
I understand,
Hamid.
And I want to thank you for the call. We do want to take some more calls, but congratulations on 10 years without gambling. It's certainly impressive, and I commend you for that. And I thank you for calling in today.
And Linda, I just want to jump back on something, reiterate the stigmatization. Generally, in dealing with treating addictions, whether it's substance or behavioral addiction, it does make it very hard. People are more readily judged. Someone who is struggling or surviving cancer, for example, if you look at just public sentiment, and emotion mm-hmm. towards something, there's a feeling or underlying belief that, you know, you didn't cause the cancer, but you caused your own addiction. And that's something that's really hard for people to struggle with. So our last caller, I think, was very brave to come forward
yes,
like that.
Yes, I want to congratulate him. But I also want to note the difference between the acceptance of alcoholism as a disease versus compulsive gambling as a disease. And I was wondering if you or Sylvia would like to comment about that.
I just want to mention that the Columbia Clinic draws in a diverse cross-section of different ethnic cultural backgrounds, including members of groups where stigma within the group makes it difficult for people in their to seek
this. Is it strictly confidential, by the way?
Our work is confidential there, our clients.
That's important.
Yeah.
And we have another caller on the line, a woman that we love here at The Positive Mind, a very, very loyal listener and regular caller, Carol in Brooklyn. Carol, how you doing today?
I'm wonderful. Hi, Ben. Hi to everyone.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you. It's been a while.
Yes. I grew up in a family. My father was he gambled on horses. There were five of us, two boys. Three girls. I'm the second of the five. The eldest died early. My brother who follows me is just like my father in terms of gambling on the racehorse. My other brother, who is the youngest, he doesn't gamble. For myself, no matter how high the lottery goes, I don't even think of trying to bet. I'm just not into that.
It's too much of a risk for you, or you're turned off by what you've seen in your family?
Pardon?
Is it because you're turned off by what you've seen in your family, or because you worry
because
that you're at a greater
my nature,
risk?
I think.
It's your.
My question is, what makes one susceptible? Because of the five of us, it's my brother who is the third of the five of us, right? He's the one who is the most compulsive gambler. My other brother, who is still alive, he's the last of the five. He doesn't gamble at all. None of us gamble except my brother. He's a compulsive, and just like my father, he gambles on horses.
So you're wondering what makes
what makes one susceptible? Why is it that I don't ever feel? I've never bought a lottery ticket, never in my life. It doesn't even occur to me to do it. What makes a difference?
So definitely, Carol, as I mentioned before, gambling and addiction runs in families, and one might carry some genetic factors that might make you more susceptible to gamble.
Mm-hmm.
Despite this, environmental factors have a lot, contribute to a lot in this development of the problem. For example, you might find pleasure in other activities that keep your mind away from gambling. You might have other hobbies. You might
other addictions, because it's not just gambling addiction. That we all have addictions.
Okay. Well, in this topic, addiction can be shared, right? So mm-hmm. even in a family that has substance use disorder, mm-hmm. they can also develop gambling disorder, right? It's not just gambling. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, it depends on each person.
Yes.
You can go against your genetic factors, and you can go even against your environmental factors.
Yes, yes.
If you have, for example, a strong emotional
support system.
So, for example, you might have a greater coping skills or better problem-solving skills, or parallel, parallel interests that mm-hmm. keep your mind away from gambling. So you can go. Meet all this genetic load that you have mm-hmm. and still don't have the problem
mm-hmm.
while your brother does.
You may have also just social learning, dictates that, addictions are learned behaviors too.
Yeah.
You see someone modeling it and, to deal with a stressful situation and you adopt that. You indicated your brother and your father, and perhaps you observed the interactions, the dynamics between those two, and somewhere you made a decision, well, I'm not going to go that way. Now, you may have other things that, you use to deal with stress, whether they're adaptive or maladaptive.
Mm-hmm.
Linda?
But, families are develop, okay?
Yeah.
They're like a moving train. And it's quite possible that your brother saw your father as a winner.
Yes, he was closer to my father.
He was closer to your father. So there was a closer identification
right.
with your father.
Yes.
And that you probably were a closer identification to your mother,
who was
more of a practical and conservative person having to do with taking risks.
Right.
So there is another factor in addition to the factors that Sylvia mentioned and Frank mentioned.
Right. Also, the mother, reinforcing a stability that may be needed. If she were able to observe or see the gambling from the husband, father, and accept it, but know I need to go the extra few yards to make sure that everything stays on course.
Well, let's talk a little bit about women and gambling.
Some data actually suggests that men have more risk of developing gambling addictions than
women.
Yeah,
I noticed that when I was reading online.
Right. But we're seeing more women in the GA rooms and more women, single women, going to casinos alone. There has been a shift in the population of compulsive gamblers. When I started years and years ago, there were very, very few people, women, identifying themselves as problem or compulsive gamblers. And women have now more control over their finances. They're more independent. The women that are most vulnerable to going into a binge or problem gambling situation are the women that have lost relationships, and the senior women, the women who are elderly, are alone, and are feeling quite isolated and in the casino.
I was going to say, the one time I went to Atlantic City, I saw a lot of elderly women at the tables and at the slot machines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Carol, thank you so much for the call. It's been a while, but always a pleasure to hear from you.
Same here, Ben. Thank you so much.
Thank
love you.
You
guys.
Yep, love you too. Happy New Year.
Bye-bye. Same to you.
Thank you. And I think we don't have time for another phone call, but I want to thank our guests very much for making it here today. It's really been a pleasure and been enlightening and informing discussing this stuff with you. Linda Berman, clinical social worker, co-author of Behind the Eight Ball, a recovery guide for families of gamblers. You can find that on Amazon. And Dr. Sylvia Franco and Frank Grazioli of the Gambling Clinic at Columbia University. And you guys offer free counseling for gamblers and families of gamblers. You want to tell our listeners about that?
Yes. So we offer free treatment, individualized therapy for gambling disorders of all sorts of gambling, lottery, sports, slot machines. And we also offer free treatment for significant others. So any member of your family that has been affected by gambling can also receive treatment. And you can call to the number 646-774-8096 to make the appointment.
Give that number one more time. That's the Gambling Clinic here in New York at Columbia University.
It's 646-774-8096.
I'm a private practitioner, and people can reach me. I guess they could Google me. But I have also done consulting work for family businesses that have family members who are addicted and are involved in the family business, and that's been an eye-opener for the families and for myself. It's quite interesting work. I just wanted to mention it.
Thank you all again so much for making it here today on short notice, of course, because, we were going to do a different topic today. And, we like to keep things sort of relevant to what's going on. And, here's Linda over here waving her Powerball ticket around. I got mine up here on tape to a corkboard or tacked to a corkboard, but... Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and good luck tonight if you have a ticket. I know you'll win. And if you do, don't forget, WBAI will be happy to take your tax-deductible contributions. So thanks, everyone. We'll be back next week. Same time, same place, right here, 99.5 FM, on your dial, here in New York City. Good luck tonight.
Good man bad, yeah, yeah. Money will make enough man mad, yeah, yeah. Money will make virgin and virgin go to war. Forget about the good times, you better make it change your ways. You're not careful, it will make you lose your mind, yes. If you worship it, destined for your fall. Very addicted, partially selected. No matter sell your soul. Now them get rich and a quad like big timer. Burn down the bridge that them cross over. Boy, you can't preach today and broke tomorrow. Don't you know that's